Member, the
okay.
So I declare the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Labor open before we can do anything. I'll give over to Mr. Sakasa, the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, to take us to the agenda for the day.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, members. Good morning to the department. The agenda for today, Wednesday, 25 May 2016, is as follows. The chairperson has just done the opening and welcome, and then to the apologies, adoption of the agenda. The first item will be a report by the Department of Labor on the protected employment enterprises, which was formerly the Shared Employment Factory. The committee will deliberate on that presentation. And that presentation is followed by a briefing by the Department of Labor on its fourth quarterly report 2015-16. The committee will deliberate on that presentation, and there will be deliberations by the committee on the way forward regarding the Labor Laws Amendment Bill, then consideration of draft minutes of our last meeting 11 May, and then an update on the Geneva Conference. I've got two apologies, Mrs. Van Stalfake and Mr. Tohama. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Takasa. Remember?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I just wanted to give more clarity on the apology of Honorable Van Stalfake. She is not well. She went to hospital last night, but was treated and discharged by given an instruction to be at home. She was not critical but unable to come to work. Thanks.
I think it's accepted, honorable Lord, because you could see even yesterday she was struggling to walk, so it is accepted. Yes, Mr. Tawama, okay, so. And the agenda members, Honorable Barclay.
It's good to get better from the committee and get well soon. And we accept the agenda.
Barclay is saying, the adoption has been proposed by Honorable Pakrin and Honorable Mandate is seconded by Honorable Mandate, so it is adopted. Africa Day for all of us as Africans, because our own country, South Africa, is an integral part of such a beautiful continent. And we should be proud of our continent as well, because through the AU, the continent has been able to stand its ground against dictators and against coup d'etats, against poverty, against anything that is inhuman in our continent. With those few members, we can go back to the agenda. The first presentation is going to be done by What is the unit? If he supported employment enterprise, supported employment, it's going to be like we have to learn very fast. And then from the DG and the entourage, we will be looking forward to the fourth quarter report that is 2015-16. We have heard the first one. You are welcome in the committee, and we hope that by being open to us, it will make things easier and smooth for us. The minute we detect that you are over presenting the truth, then that's when we evolve. So to be straightforward and open and to motivate for what has not been achieved. Of course, we'll interrogate, but it should be easy to deal with someone who is honest than dealing with someone who is keeping for you. So we'll give over to you, but if you must start presenting something on the process, you need to know who's going to be presenting the first speaker as well.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning to the chairperson and the honorable members. Today, chairperson, I'm not going to do the presentation. I'll ask the chief executive officer of the supported employment enterprises to do the presentation. His name is Mr. Shlum Kononbangu. He's the CEO of this entity. He'll introduce the chief financial officer. I'm also here with the rest of the delegation of the Department of Labor, which is made up of the different branches. It's a huge delegation today because yesterday we had our budget vote at the NCOP. So we felt that we'll all stay for this, and also the fact that we have some work that we're doing in the provincial office, and that's why you see this huge delegation today. But we also approach the UIF, the compensation fund, as well, because from the we were not too sure whether the committee would request a presentation relating to the performance of the two entities as well. Mr. Mrotoba is the DDP Public Employment Services, and the supported employment enterprises falls under the that branch. So you'll also get questions relating to the operation of this entity. We also have the DDG's Credit Enforcement Services, Ms. Edmoilwa, DDG Corporate Services, Ms. Pele Tengeni, the DDG Labor Market Policy, Mr. Vessel Sheffield, the acting CFO of the department, Mr. Dave Kyle, the Chief Information Officer of the Department, Mr. Mandan Chombo, and Mr. Temgo Simkalipi, who is the Chief Director responsible for labor market policies. Mr. Chief Osana, who is the Chief Inspector, sitting right here. Mr. Vioma Fata, the Commissioner, and Mr. Maro Pink, who was representing the UIF Commissioner today, because he could not be with us. He has attended his apology. And also Ms. Nolu Koloskaba, who's from our monitoring evaluation section. I don't know if I've left off someone. There's Mr. Joseph Lituaba sitting right at the back. He's from the Compensation Fund, the acting Chief Director, Corporate Services at the Compensation Fund. Ms. Bonal is our internal auditor. We've taken a decision to say that both internal audit and risk must always be part of this presentation that we do here. so that they if a committee wants to engage with them as well, the committee can. And I know in some instances, the two, they provide an assurance, some kind of assurance to the department. And the AG relies on them when they audit the department. So felt it they should always be part of the delegation. So yes, we have Ms. Nkuna and Mr. Zwane from Internal Audit and Tenders. I'll now just hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. Thanks.
Each year I listened to all of the parties, none of them showed even by show of hands who are these people that you are talking to. Who is one caller here?
Let me ask them to raise their hands.
Those that I have no idea of the faces is Mr. Ngobo, is it Mr. Ngobo, is Mr.
Nkuna.
Nkuna.
Okay. She's the chief auditor selective in the department.
Okay, and Mr. Nitlaba?
Nitlaba is right at the back.
Okay.
Mr. Zwane?
Mr. Zwane.
Is the risk manager in the department?
That's for me.
Sorry, sir?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee, representatives and officials from the Department of Labor. With me to do the presentation is the Chief Financial Officer of the Support Employment Enterprises, Mr. Sipeni Ngongo. Chair's presentation will cover the following areas: a background overview, the transitional structure of the organizational entity, the turnaround strategy, the supported employment enterprise legal status, fifth, the transition to a full government component. Sixth, draft annual financial statements, which the CFO will present. Item number 7 will be a budget overview. With regards to the background, the SEE factory was established in 1943 for the sole purpose of creating employment opportunities for ex-service men. Until 1999, the SEF for that had preferential employment status and compelled government departments to buy offices, school furniture, as well as hospital linen and uniforms from the entity. The factories provided employment opportunities for staffers with specialist abilities, and in return the state ensured their continued employment by continuing to procure from the factories. Next slide. This reduced the burden on the state and increased the number of people that participated in the economy. The Department of Labor continues to subsidize salaries of deaf and blind workers in private factories similar to the SEF-SEE, and also subsidizes national councils of the disabled and to associate people with disability in formal employment. With regards to the original preferential procurement status, when it was revoked, the number of people employed in the SE declined from 3,000 right across the country, in fact instituted in 7 of the 9 provinces, from 3,000 in 1991 to currently 904, which means the factories have got a potential collectively to employ 3,000 employees. Factories are now supported by 125 staff members situated at head offices and some spread across the country in the various factories. The skills levels of the employees have stagnated as a result of those factors raised above related to the reduction in the number of employees and the fact that we have not in the past period employed more technical staff and employees on the editor. The demographics on the factories became imbalanced. You will note in some of the visits that the portfolio committee has undertaken that in some of the factories that remain white, we've been able to effectively ensure that we comply with the provisions of the Employment Equity Act. The structure presents a transitional structure from the current status, the SEE situation, from the SEE into a national government component. In details of various positions in the entity, you will note that you would have your CEO plus your chief financial officer, supported by their PA. There is a management structure which includes the CFO, an operations director, a business development director, a deputy director responsible for human resources in the entity. Below that structure will be deputy directors responsible for supply chain management, responsible for finance management, responsible for direct production in the wood division of the factories and textile division, and three deputy directors plus an assistant director of HRM. You will have below that supply chain management heads in the entity, your finance clerks and your factory managers managing factories in all of the factories throughout the country, and technical instructors supporting factory managers, and a client services division and tax responsible for dealing directly with clients, and personnel officers in the various factories responsible for dealing with matters related to employees. You would have now at bottom your number of employees who would work employees, which currently stands at about 740 employees right across the country. And in the same, in some of the factories, you would also have a textile division responsible for the production of linen for government hospitals, clothing for government employees, etc., 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 etc. The next slide. With regards to the turnaround strategy, a turnaround strategy was developed and approved for implementation by the department, which aims to do the following. Stabilize factories through growth in sales, which is currently the current project with regards to getting new clients into the entity. Secondly, increase the number of people with disabilities employed in the supported employment enterprises over time to beyond 3,000, which was originally the case. By the end of 2019, this entails the establishment of new factories in two provinces, which is Limpopo and Mpumalanga, which is currently a project in the feasibility stages. The third bullet point is that we become a repository to the public and private sector organizations that wants to meet the employment equity targets in terms of disability. So that is the ability to provide in the private and public sector skilled employees in order for these entities or the sectors to meet their employment equity targets with regards to employees with disabilities. The fourth bullet point, partner with small and medium enterprises and government organizations to achieve an inclusive economy with no boundaries for people with disabilities. The next slide. The chapter 6 with regards to the Public Employment Services Act entails or confers the following legal status to the entity. That Act No. 4 of 2014 prescribes that the supported employment enterprise is established in terms of the Public Services Act as a Section 7A national government component. The second bullet point relates to the functions of the entity is that it must facilitate supported employment, which is quite critical for persons with disabilities. Secondly, provide work opportunities for persons with disabilities. Thirdly, develop and implement programs that promote the employability of persons with disabilities, including persons with permanent disablement, as defined in the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act 1993, Act No. 130 of 1993, in the light of their evolving needs in a changing economy, and perform any other functions that may be prescribed by the minister. The implications of this provision is that the Employment Services Act No. 4 of 2014, Chapter 6, confers a legal form to the SEF by making provision for the establishment of supported employment enterprises as a national government component, contemplated in Section A of the Public Service Act 1994, Proclamation Number 102 of 1994, promote work and employment opportunities for persons with disabilities. For the legal status to be effective, the President must proclaim the SEE as a national government component. Currently, the structure would entail all of the processes in state, both administrative and legal, suggest a transition process towards that proclamation. The implications thereof of the ES Act, amongst others, includes the following: that the SEF, SEE will be expected to operate optimally and generate adequate sales revenue to sustain itself when it becomes a national government component. That in this regard, policies will have to be reviewed to reflect the requirements of a national government component. Thirdly, the head of the national government component will be the accounting officer. The next slide. The SEE will have to have its own governance and assurance structures, such as the Audit and Risk Committee. An advisory committee would have to be established to oversee the strategic direction of the entity and advise the Minister of Labour. And government procurement from national government component will be much more easier, as it will be regarded as a government-to-government business, who wants to become a national government component. The SEE will still require time to prepare its business processes and governance structures to be able to become and operate as a national government component. It's a process which requires quite a number of things to be put in place for us to arrive at that particular point. Second bullet point, a considerable amount of support from the Department of Labour is still required for the coming number of years to help with the transition into a national government component. The Department of Labour would still be required to provide technical support, governance and strategic leadership of the entity which it is currently providing. Consultations with public works are underway, as I would have indicated as part of the presentation, and we're beginning to explore the possibility of opening two more factories in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. The entity continues to employ additional persons with disabilities who assist in various provinces in the assembly and maintenance of school furniture closer to delivery sites. That's what we do with regards to delivery of furniture in quite a number of provinces. A number of projects are currently underway to reposition the SEE in the market and to ensure the entity generates adequate revenue to obtain self-sustainability. A study trip was undertaken quite recently towards the end of last year, including the Minister to Algeria for the purposes of building collaborations and drawing lessons on the manufacturing of processes, which study has entailed subsequently engagements with the Algerian embassy, the possibility of some of our sites from the seven factories being the manufacturing base for prosthetics and assistive devices. That will ensure that those devices then are made much more affordable to quite a number of South Africans. Some of the current SEE factories have been identified for recommissioning to use as manufacturing plants for prosthetics and assistive devices. There exists a huge potential in the market for prosthetics, and the SEE will play a huge role in ensuring that affordable quality prosthetics and assistive devices are manufactured locally for persons with disabilities. Algeria has provided a case study that will assist the SEE to map out the requirements of converting some spaces within the existing factories into manufacturing lines for these products. Other projects in the pipeline includes a project is being finalized to include the National Treasury and the Department of Public and the Department of Public Services and Administration to conclude administrative processes for the entity to become a national government component. That's a third project. Securing long-term contracts, which is critical for long-term sustainability of the factories, with provincial and national governments with regards to manufacturing and supply of school furniture and hospital linen. Some of the current signed contracts are with the National Department of Education, the Western Cape Department of Health, over in the Eastern Cape, which is a development agency, and the Eastern Cape Department of Education. Product development initiatives are currently underway to ensure that factories provide new products that are in demand in the market. New products are being produced, made from recycled material, and due to the decline in wood supply in the local economy, the entity is exploring possibilities of manufacturing furniture that uses less natural wood. That's the background presentation share with regards to the entity, and may I request, with your permission, the Chief Financial Officer to take us through the draft annual financial statements and the budget overview. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members. In terms of the presentation, as the CEO said, I'm going to take you through item number 6 of the draft 2015-2016 annual financial statements, as well as the 2016-2017 budget overview. With regards to the unaudited annual financial statements 2015-16, the entity has generated sales to the value of 52 million. And that with a gross profit of 16 million, and that is 81% of our sales. In terms of other income that our entity has received, it is predominantly coming from, in first end, from external investments. External investments being the interest that we earn on our bank account. If we've got cash that is sitting on our account for a longer period, we do any interest on a month-to-month basis. And then we also receive revenue from non-exchange transactions, which is a subsidy that we receive from National Treasury as an allocation, and that equates to 125 million. Our net impairments are currently sitting at 3.5 million, and it's purely your inventory impairments as well as your bad debts impairments. Our operating expenses are at 117 million, and they include compensation for employees, as well as our normal operating costs of running the factories, as well as administrations of salaries and operational costs. Finance costs are at 175,000, and finance costs are read on our finance leases, that is vehicles that are hired from GP, as well as photocopying machines that are hired from other sales providers. And for the year ending 31st March 2016, the entity is reporting a profit of 40 million. With regards to the statement of financial position, which is the balance sheet, our current assets are currently sitting at 5.7 million, and that's really our printed machinery as well as office furniture. Our current assets are 213 million. The bulk of the 213 million is coming from our cash and cash equivalents, which is prepayments that we receive from our debtors, our payment terms, or our conditions of sale entails that orders that we receive from customers with a 50% deposit, and in some cases some customers elect to pay a full upfront prepayment. That's why you will see a big balance on our cash and cash equivalents. And then our total assets are sitting at 218 million. On the equity side, the entity has got retained earnings of about 88 million, and this is an accumulation of earnings that the entity has accumulated over the last years, and currently is reported at 88 million. And then on the liability side, the non-current liabilities, that's the long-term portion of our finance leases, which is sitting at 63,000. Most of our finance leases are coming to an end, hence the low balance on our liabilities in respect of the non-current liabilities on finance leases. And then current liabilities, our trade and other payables include the prepayments again that we have received from our debtors. We will receive a cash which we will report as part of our cash and cash equivalent, and then we will raise also a corresponding entry to raise the prepayment as a liability, because until we deliver the goods, the risk and rewards are not yet transferred to the customer, and hence we cannot recognize the money that is received as a prepayment and revenue. And then our total liabilities are 880 million, with the total equity and liabilities at 280 million. Next slide, please. With regards to the budget overview for the new financial year, or current financial year that we are in, which is 2016-17, Our budgeted sales for the year amounts to 72 million, with cost of sales of 42 million. The budgeted gross profit on those revenues is 41%. National Treasury has allocated a subsidy amounting to 144 million rand in this current financial year. Based on the employees, both factories as well as administration staff, the budget for cost of employees is sitting at 117 million. So current complement plus vacancies that are funded. The operating expenditure for the year is at 32 million. Capital expenditure, which is replacement of machinery, is budgeted at 16 million for the current financial year. In terms of the headcount, we have budgeted 1,099 employees. That's your current employees as well as vacancies. Included in the 1,099 is 98 vacant posts belonging to both the factory as well as administrative staff. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Supported Employment Enterprises. Members, the presentation has been made to us, and it's for us now to presentation. If I have Honorable Bahrain and three. So Honorable Bahrain, and then after that it will be Honorable Mandash, and then Honorable Oliu. Over to you, Honorable Bahrain.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. First, to give our support to the supported employment enterprises is very much needed in our country today. Just in terms of the statistics, from what I understand is that 3% of the population are disabled in some way or other, and yet the business community is only reflecting 1%. So we've got a large divide between what is there and what we could have, and from what I understand is that the employment equity target are not met at all by the business community, which gives the department an opening to not only have a stick to say we would get into trouble as a business community if we don't take the people, but here's the carrot, we've got people who can come in. So well done to this report and this great strength thereon. But I do want to say is that the business community, I think, needs more information, more feedback. There needs to be an education of the business owners. It needs to be educated, and I think it should be part of their budget, and in fact they should somehow get out there to say that we do have people that are qualified that can come in to the business community, which takes me on to the next step, is that I know there are businesses who possibly consider adopting one of these factories maybe, or at least partnering, somehow be in partnership with an enterprise, which might also help in terms of the budget. Just in terms of training, I know that there are many of the people in the disabilities sector. I know I work a lot with Epilepsy South Africa, who are training people to go into the workplace, and maybe there could be some sort of partnership again there with organizations that are willing to raise their own money to train their own people to go into the business community, and I don't see much of that. And it needs to be sustainability. It's not a massive budget that the department receives, but it needs to be more sustainability, and maybe they could partner with those organizations out there that are actually training people themselves. Overall, I'm pleased with the report, and thank you very much for it, but I think there's still a lot more to be done. I mean, for instance, SAFM, our national radio station, has a disability report once a month. And maybe the director could allot someone to go on to SAFM to speak on the disability report. It costs nothing, but at least there are people out there listening to hear what we're actually doing. So thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Honorable Mandash.
Thank you, Chairperson. In appreciating this report, I only want to pose a few questions. We appreciate the work that has been done so far, but I just want to check when the entity is saying they have not complied with the Employment Equity Act,
What is the hindrance? What is the delay? What is open? And also want to check whether there are black students that have taken maybe to SEC colleges for them to be able to participate in this entity. Because we cannot entertain a student that says we have not complied yet or a Department of Labor that is supposed to supervise the implementation of the EEA to other departments. And for me that is unacceptable. You also talk of vacancies that are existing in the entity, 98 of them. Why are they not fit? Generally, this is good work that we recommend, but I am concerned that you ignore the implementation of the Employment Equity Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Members. Honorable Members. Thanks, Chair. So let me join my colleagues in appreciating the work that has been done. I want to check on the energy. How reliable are your clients in terms of the duration of the contract? Because your sustainability is going to depend on your clients. I also want to rehash what Honorable Mandashe has said. 98 vacancies is a sizable number. What is your plan of filling those vacancies? Lastly, is a comment to say, I think you need to embark on programs for more advocacy, so as to attract more clients. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable. I just want to add something.
Yes, Chair. I suppose that the entity could table to us the numbers so that we can be able to, going forward, monitor the implementation of this Act. But this report is silent. It doesn't say, it doesn't table how many blacks, how many whites, how many, all that was that is needed by the Act. The report is silent, so we will not be able to, you know, monitor going forward. When they come back, we want to see a difference, but we can't now, as the report is silent on the decay of the report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable
Members,
just to add something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Questions? Regarding product developer initiatives that are underway, I'd like to know what kind of products that's in the developmental stage, where in the process are we with regard to the identified products. When would prototypes be ready for testing or perhaps for market testing? Thank you. And then, sorry, Madam Chair, just another question. It's stated that new products are being sort of developed from recycled material, and I think that's a very good initiative because recycling is always to the benefit of the environment. And what kind of products are being manufactured? The first gen products in terms of seen different kind of benches being manufactured from recycled plastic. And then lastly, that stated that there's a decline in wood material. What's the position regarding the importation of wood supply from South America, in particular where the prices are very competitive, if we have decline in such in the country? Thank you, ma'am.
So it's over to the entity to respond to the questions.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the question in particular from Honourable Member Mantashe regarding our inability to meet our employment equity targets. there's a particular background with regards to that, and briefly, the fact that with the establishment of fascism in 1943, members would note that at the time, the fascists were established to employ predominantly white employees, all of the 12 factories from 1943. Post-1994, the factories had predominantly remained exactly the same. When the preferential procurement status was removed from the factories, the British government department was buying directly procurement from them. The numbers, which were about 98%, if not 99% white, were reduced to about 1,000 from 3,000. And as a result, with the factories almost on the brink of closure, because the preferential procurement status was removed, and factories were no longer guaranteed contracts directly from government departments, the department decided that let's look at universal best practice with regards to the factories. There are similar entities existing elsewhere, and it was noted that quite a number of developing and developed countries elsewhere in the world provide employment opportunities for persons with disabilities. Part of what we've been doing in the last few years, honorable members, has been an attempt to regain the status of the factories with regards to procuring business opportunities from various government departments, particularly two departments in government, the Department of Basic Education, and secondly, the Department of Health. Now, with that attempt made nationally and in provinces, and getting some contracts from various government departments, you can't willy-nilly as management retrench in the first, retrench white employees in order to meet your employment equal targets. What you could do in the factories is you increase your employment opportunities such that you are able to meet your employment equal targets. The challenge, Honorable Montage and rest of the members, has been our inability in the last few years to get enough contracts from various government departments, both at a national level and at a provincial level, that will ensure that the factories increase their employment opportunities, but at the same time, ensuring that we are able to comply with the Employment Equity Act with regards to race gender in the factories. That's a struggle that at the current moment we're currently facing, getting more contracts. We will get there. At managerial level, we've addressed such problems where they remain a major problem relates to factory employees. And that's the task at hand that management is currently dealing with, getting more contracts in order to ensure that we meet our employment equity targets. So I appreciate the question from Honorable Montage. Certainly, with regards to the vacancy rate, the factories have got two components of employees. Factory workers governed by the basic conditions of employment, and a number of employees, about 125 of them, Honorable Chair, are governed by the public service. The number of vacancies relates to those employees governed by the public service, and these would have been due to delays with regards to the recruitment processes in the public services, hence the number of vacancies. So the bulk of those vacancies relates to that component in the employed through the public service, not such employees. With regards to broader advocacy, that's the question related to advocacy. We bring advocacy, honorable member, to quite a number of initiatives. If I may mention a few, this opportunity in the portfolio committee to present our case on who we are, that's part of our advocacy. Quite a number of initiatives undertaken in the past, which will continue, were honorable members led by the chair, that's the factories, that's advocacy. Where, certainly in the factories, we would conduct what we call on an annual basis, open days where we invite members of the public, stakeholders, to come and view our products. That's part of our advocacy. Fourthly, of an interest, the launch last year led by the Minister of Support Employment Enterprises in Isimara. Another opportunity related to advocacy would have been an opportunity where the Deputy President, as part of his visits to the Eastern Cape, the Deputy President of the Republic, would have had an opportunity to go to the factory and would have showcased to the Deputy President some of the products manufactured in the factory and the fact that the factories have got a potential to manufacture and provide linen to government hospitals throughout the Republic. That's part of our advocacy. Through our newsletters, we're doing advocacy. So there are quite a number of initiatives. These initiatives are related to the electronic media, PSAFM, and other associations. It's not something that we've got to take up. With regards to product development, there are two aspects, there are two initiatives currently underway. Honorable Chair, if I may give an example, the Algerian project currently in the feasibility process will entail the factories manufacturing devices meant for persons with disabilities. I could list quite a number of them. Your artificial limb, your artificial leg, your assistive devices, your hearing devices, your wheelchairs, your electronic wheelchairs, your name, etc., etc., etc. That's a huge project. It's a huge project that would ensure that we do manufacturing, but at the same time, the rest of the other factories, we do assembling of those products. That's a project currently underway. Some of the new products currently in development, which we are currently developing, entails meeting some of the demands related to rural areas or villages. If I may use this one example, honorable member, communities and villages and rural areas have got access to water. But what they don't have access to with regards to communal taps are tanks and trolleys that could carry more than 50 liters of water from the household to the communal tap. We developed a product that would ensure that we'd have a user-friendly trolley, not a wheelbarrow, a user-friendly trolley that could carry a 50 liter bucket to carry water from the communal tap back to the household. That's one product that we're developing. So services that government provides to villages and rural communities are now complete. We're developing that product. The second product that we're developing, these are basic products, but that meets the government services, it relates to municipal workers. Municipal workers, you would know that they would carry some of them at night or in the morning, black plastic bags. We're developing a trolley that would ensure that a municipal worker, be it a male or female, carries a trolley, a user-friendly trolley that you would use to carry your black plastic bag once it's full, you leave it next to the road and you proceed with your trolley. To deal with environmental problems, Honorable Chair, used tires, which are part of an environmental problem, we're converting the tires in the factories to outdoor chairs, so that we deal with an environmental crisis with regards to what you do with used tires, thus a new product development. The prosthetics, etc., are bigger projects. So there are quite a number of initiatives in the factories underway so that we reposition the factories so that when the market in relation to school furniture, linen, etc., drastically reduces, the factories are repositioned for new products. So these are some of the initiatives and there are quite a number of them. We've explored the international market. The consultation at the moment, to answer the other honorable member, relates to the domestic market. There's a possibility of partnerships which we're currently exploring with regards to the SADC region. What can we do in partnership with small and medium enterprises to produce goods that are required by the SADC region, be it Zimbabwe, Lesotho, Mozambique, etc., etc., etc. So, Chair, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Clarity. You referred to the turnaround strategy. Which one is this that you are talking about? And what you just in brief, if it's a new one. Maybe Saxon study, is it a new one? Which one is referring to? Is the one after the treasury has taken away the preferential status of the department of the supported employment enterprise to buy from government departments? Are you referring to that one, that the one that was introduced by the department of labor? Or are you referring to that was in 1999? Which one are you referring to?
The turnaround strategy evolved around what the department referred to and approved as the first phase of the business case. When the factories were about to collapse, the department requested external service providers to look at whether there existed a possibility, as opposed now the preferential purchase status. Well, the department wanted to make a decision with regards to the factories, so the department had a process providers to say, what do we do with these entities? And in that phase, developed what was called the first phase of the business case, that international, they existed similar factories of a similar kind, providing employment opportunities to persons with disabilities. Now, the second phase of that business case was the implementation thereof, of the business strategy, which is currently underway. The implementation of a turnaround strategy, which I would have listed in the presentation that would have attained new business initiatives, expanding the practice to new provinces, advocacy, getting new contracts, generating more sales, etc., etc. We now, Chair, implementing the turnaround strategy as an entity, which included, amongst others, a third phase of becoming, if you like, as I call it, the third phase of becoming a fully-fledged national government component. Entities that operate as any other national government component in public sector, able to generate their own income, employ more persons with disabilities. So the turnaround strategy relates to the department, briefly saying these factories all over the world and elsewhere have got a potential to employ more persons with disabilities. That's currently under implementation and underway, which will lead to the factories become a national government component. I thank you.
I hear, but you are not direct. I'm not getting what I want to get from you, because if we're saying we're talking to the strategy, let me remind you the strategy, the turnaround strategy of the department, which was aimed to have a clear and definable legal status. That was done by the department, which was aimed to operations that are efficient in entities. And we can go on. Now, if the department has introduced that strategy, surely if that strategy is not working, you should be able to tell us what is that that went wrong in that turnaround strategy that you've introduced, and what is that now you are bringing in or you have done to deal with the challenges that could not be even be resolved by that turnaround strategy, because all the failure to for the turnaround strategy not to achieve what was meant to be achieved by it. It led to a number of concerns raised by the Auditor General. So it would be then important to us to talk. We know we have challenges, but you don't be general, because we are general. We are not going to be in a position to know whether you are going forward or backwards, and we can't then make you to account and come in front of us. It's the same question, it's not the same, but it's similar to the question that was raised by Honorable Mandashe, that you did not respond to of exactly your targets, your employment equity targets. Because when you are general, we are unable to judge you whether you are progressing or not progressing. So maybe without going further with strategy, just talk as to how are you going to address the problem that led to the under expenditure of all the programs. That's one. And also, it's only IES that is excluded in terms of under expenditure, which has done better than the others. Then you also must talk to the points that the AG has noted for the department to perform better than what is doing. So, because if you could tell us that, then we'll be able to see and we'll be able to charge you. We know it's difficult, but let's have a clear plan forward so that tomorrow when you come, we make you to account on what you have told us. But the interest indeed that this supported employment enterprise must work. That's one question. And the other question is, in your slide 4 and 5, you are talking about workers that you have currently employed, and that's just that slide, something does not tally. Remember that after sending the presentation, I made a further inquiry to ask exactly how many workers that are currently employed. And the number that you gave is different from the numbers that you see. It's also different from the number that you have currently spoken about now, that currently you will tell me, if I make a mistake, you have 940, or is it 940, is it 904? But look at slide 4, slide 5, and then verify exactly what you have told us. Maybe you've made a mistake there. But what is important is for us to know currently how many workers are there, and talk to that employment equity, because we really want to follow you on. You might have mixed up the administrative ones who are official and the workers, so just talk to us and just clarify that.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to what we're going to do, Chair, we'll be to provide the portfolio committee with a breakdown of employees and the demographics thereof and the race in each factory. So the committee then establishes exactly where we would have been able to comply with employment equity targets, where we had not been able to comply with the targets thereof. Who will do that? A breakdown of each and every factor. That information is readily available. We'll provide that information to answer your question and that of Honorable Mandashe. That's what we've got to do. Secondly, you touched on a quite named point with regards to the area that you mentioned. The legislators, the turnaround strategy, etc., etc. What we're currently doing, and I appreciate that the fact that you mentioned those points, that's exactly what we're doing currently. Because with regards to the legislators, you would notify the presentation, I made reference to us arising at a point where it will become a national government component. That's clearly defined the legal status of the entity. It will become a national government component, but will arrive at that point will require a number of legislative and administrative processes, including consultations with the National Treasurer, consultations with the Public Service and Administration, getting technical support from an entity called GTEC to assist us to be able to transit from the current status to a national government component. So those are processes that way. The recommendations you made reference to time frame, Chair, I would argue from where I'm sitting, Chair, that this may take longer than we had anticipated. We've engaged with the panel and we've realized that the entity is not as yet ready to become a national government component. That's the conclusion and engagement with the department that we've arrived at. Because if we're going to become a national government component, say tomorrow, we will collapse. Will collapse in the absence of long-term contracts, either with various government departments or alternatively achieving goals with the public sector. Because the immediate will be the national government component, there will be a reduced financial support from the national treasury, and the sectors will collapse. So for quite a number of years, we've got to be supported by the national treasury, we've got to be supported by the Department of Labor, until sustain that the certainty with regards to the entity being able to generate more sales and more business on its own. So the points that you have listed, exactly what we're doing for turnaround strategy, defining our legal status, getting more business for the entity to move forward, addressing employment equity targets, and also with regards to employment equity targets, would provide you with some of the detailed analysis with regards to the fact that, honestly speaking, in the absence of additional work, we are unable to meet our employment equity targets, and we provide you with a breakdown of all of the factory employees. Thirdly, with regards to the age issues, we've now, in the Department of Labor, with the audit committee, taken quite a number of the audit queries from the AG. And as a result, with regards to all of them, we have addressed them. We have addressed them as they were raised by the AG. So that's a huge turnaround strategy with regards to the entity. And there would be few queries coming back from the AG with regards to the entity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. There are two sides to these factors. One, that's the side that is heavily subsidized by state, which without it, the factories will collapse. So the second side is the manufacturing side of the factories and the capability of the factories to generate enough revenue so that the factories can sustain them. So currently, the factories they've registered a gross profit margin of about just 16 million. And if you compare it with the subsidy that they get from the department, they get a subsidy of 135 million. And you look at operating expenses of the factory that are around 117 million. And then you realize that there's just no way that the factory on their own and without the subsidy can be sustainable. So we want to push the factories to a stage where they can operate just like a normal manufacturing company without the assistance of government. So it's going to be a gradual process that it may take realistically 5 years from now to get there. Now, the reason for the turnaround strategy that was put in place in just after 1999 was to turn these factories into was firstly to build the manufacturing capability of the factories, and secondly, given the fact that you have people who have a technical know-how in the factories but didn't have competent administration to deal to handle the products that have been manufactured. I mean, if you just look at the what the factories used to keep in their inventory,
there would be, products in their inventory first, which was manufactured for a long time without selling them. And if you quantify that, you'll find that there's a lot of money sitting there, which were not translated into, a lot of products sitting there was not translated into real value for the factories. So what we had to do, we had to make sure that we get people who are competent enough to run the factories. You get a chief financial officer who understands the language, the business language, which I think we finally have, and that is why we're confident that going forward we will be able to move factories in the right direction. The third thing is the factories have to develop a marketing strategy which helps the factories to be able to generate the kind of profit that they are generating. There are companies, your big furniture companies that are buying furniture from a supported employment enterprise, and they go and buy from them at an exorbitant cost. So I think the point that Honorable Bahrain is raising, that we may even be able to partner with some of these established furniture companies and to provide to provide products to them, it may go a long way in helping the sustainability of the structures and the reliance on the state to be the sole beneficiary or sole user of the products or sole customer. Thank you. Sole customer. I've used my quota of English for the day. So the reliance on government to be the sole customer is not going to be sustainable in the long run, especially the one the entities to to be sustainable. If you want them to send a loan and not receive any grant from the state, which is currently going down every financial year because of the resources that limited resources that the state has. The CEO has touched on the employment equity and the profile of the organization. It's going to take us some time to get there. If we can build the new factories in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, that will go a long way in ensuring that we change the demographics of the factories, which is something that we committed to do as an organization. Consultation has taken place with people in the different provinces to make sure that we give effect to this goal of establishing the two factories. I just want to touch briefly on some of the projects, especially the one on first factories. The compensation fund provides assistive devices to these beneficiaries, and including in those assistive devices are the prosthesis. And we provide these at an exorbitant price. So I think if these factories can build their own capabilities to manufacture these assistive devices, it will help the competition funds to get the assistive devices at a much more reasonable and cheaper price going forward. That's why we're excited, because it will provide us with the capability that we don't have, and secondly, it will assist us in terms of reducing the cost of procuring the assistive devices.
Thanks, PG. Maybe just to add 3 points. I think on the Honorable Mantash also raised the question of reliability, but what we have managed to do with the assistance of both Department of International Relations and Cooperation was to also, I think through their intervention, to stop government departments from relying on external supplies. They managed to create this opportunity that allowed us to be in a position where the DG signed a 3-year contract with government departments such as health, basic education and so on. And we're currently negotiating those contracts to go beyond it because we want reliability and certainty. But the second thing related to the contracts was the approval by Treasury that we charge 50% upfront from government departments, because previously, Honorable Chairperson and members will recall that government departments would take a delivery of furniture and linen, and it became very difficult when there are changes of leadership or people in finances to go after those debts. Now, with the turnaround strategy and I think this is one of the benefits, the 50% upfront deposit has minimized the debt that that we used to experience from other government departments. There's also a question on partnerships. Now, apart from funding SEF, the Department of Labor is given money through National Treasury to also subsidize other organizations that are, although private, but operating within a similar space like SEE, to subsidize the salaries of deaf and blind to the amount of 600 each. That is, people working in those factories do get a subsidy from the department. However, the issue that we have been having with National Treasury is that traditionally some organizations benefited and others did not benefit. And Treasury and ourselves have given those organizations 3 years because what we want to do now is to open up the scheme to other organizations that did not benefit traditionally on the subsidies. The new emerging organizations that were left out, and we want to extend those benefits to them. There are also subsidies that we give to national councils for people with disabilities to assist with the recruitment and placement of people with disabilities into employment. And again, currently three big organizations are benefiting, and after 2018, the scheme will also be opened up to other organizations because Treasury allows the phasing out. Thank you.
I think we understand that there are a lot of challenges in the strategy. But I think also we must pay a special effort to ensure that we don't sing the same story now that you are in, and there is really a focus in changing around what is happening in the entity. All what we are being told today is what I heard then about why it is weak. We have not done anything yet. Why is it weak? Because relying and the government is no longer forced to, you see, they buy when they want to buy. So those are things that we should look at. How do we then ensure that this entities is finance and is okay, but also financing is not you can finance, but if you still have some programs that will understand, it's also going to come back to you. The money that is there, we must ensure that is used and is used to the latter according to what it was targeted for. So those problems that make you not to be able to use the finances in those programs efficiently, you must look at them. So the important when you can say we have done, because I can't understand it might be difficult to answer the questions as they are. At times it comes never if you understand the difficulties that you are in and accept that certain things will follow, but work on that. So I don't see any other hand, or there's a hand of Honorable Bakri.
Madam Chair, just to follow up on what I'm hearing a fantastic business opportunity. The DG who's got, who flies overhead as an eagle, he can have a look at workman's compensation. They are a massive customer of the people who manufacture prosthesis. A prosthesis averages about 150,000 rand. They can demand that I put in the order only if people did it in partnership with the factories. And they can make that demand, and of course people want the business. And in wanting the business, they could then provide the expertise, and you could provide some of the people. Because you have to go to private enterprise for that. And the way I see it is a fantastic business opportunity by putting two arms of the Department of Labor together. Thank you.
Whatever you do in Zimbabwe and Mpumalanga DG, this situation remains like this for years. So the sooner you address it, the better. Can we then move to the fourth quarter, 2015-16 of the department? Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Susan. We're not going to talk about the constitutional mandate of the department. I think the committee is fairly aware of that. We'll go straight to the lessons that we're using. We thought we'd bring in line with the comment that the committee made and in one of the appearances of the department, that will bring a report which reflects not only the two legends, which is the achieved and the not achieved, but it will also bring the partially achieved, so that the committee has an appreciation of the extent to which we've moved in terms of implementing some of the indicators. So I'll go to the overall achievement, the strategic objective, from quarter one to quarter four, and this covers the reporting period of the 1st of April to the 31st of March. So this is the information that we've already given the committee, that in quarter one, the overall performance of the department was sitting at 37%. And this is how each branch has contributed to that 47%. This is the quarter two performance per strategic objective. Our overall performance in quarter two was sitting at 58%. And this is how each branch contributed to that 58%. This is the quarter three performance, the strategic objective. Was in quarter three, we dropped from 58 to 53%. And again, this is how each branch contributed to that. In quarter four, our performance is sitting at 54%. And if you look at it in terms of the indicators and the strategic objectives, so we'll see that contributory employment creation has been consistently sitting at 44%. And this is the one area that has not improved, and if we have improved,
it would have moved the performance of the department to far more greater than 64.4%. But a number of reasons why that performance is stagnated at that percentage. This is the contribution of each branch to the performance, with administration contributing 55%, the inspection enforcement services contributing 75%, and the public employment services sitting at 44%, labor policy and industrial relations sitting at 86%, resulting in that overall performance of 64%. This is an improvement from the 47% that we started with in the beginning of the financial year. The performance has been progressively improving. In the last quarter, as I indicated, we were sitting at 53 and now we are at 64. We would like it to improve to just close to 80%. We hope that in this financial year 2016-17 we'll get there. This is how this is a contribution as the each strategic objective. As I indicated, that the contribution to employment creation is sitting at 44%. Promoting equity in the labor market has improved from 17% in quarter one to now 83% in the last quarter, quarter four. Protecting vulnerable workers has also improved. We started at 71%. Our performance dipped during quarter three to 57%. We picked up in quarter four and we're now sitting at 86%. Strengthening multilateral, and this is one area that we've been doing well, we're sitting at 100%. And strengthening occupational safety protection, we started at 60% and we're now sitting at 67%. Promoting sound labor relations, we started at 50%, we're now sitting at 67%. So we started at 50%, we're still sitting at 50%. So we did not improve. Monitor the impact of labor legislation, we started at 100%, we ended at 100%. Strengthening institutional capacity of the department, we started at 35%, and we improved progressively from that to 65%. With an overall performance of 55%. The overall performance level of the department, we planned 47 targets. We have achieved, in quarter one, we have achieved 22, translating to 47%. In quarter two, we planned 48 targets, we achieved 28, translating to 58. In quarter three, we planned for 7 targets, we achieved 25, translating to 53. In quarter four, we planned 50 targets, we achieved 32, translating to 64%. Again, I think I've reflected on this slide. This is, if we do a comparative analysis of the program for quarter one to quarter four, you'll see that generally there's been an improvement in terms of performance, with an exception of public employment services. For inspection and enforcement services from quarter one to quarter four, the province, the honorable members can see that the Eastern Cape, for instance, is sitting at 92%. The Free State is sitting at 83%, the Gauteng at 82%, KZN achieved their targets, Limpopo is 67%, Mpumalanga 100%, Northern Cape 83%, Northwest 90%, and Western Cape at 75%. Public employment services for quarter one per province. If we look at, for instance, the Gauteng is sitting at 17%, and the work of Gauteng constitute about 27% of the entire work of the department. So if Gauteng is not doing well, the entire organization will not work. That's the way to the area in the work that we do. So they are sitting at 17%. And Limpopo at 29%, Mpumalanga at 29%, Northern Cape at 29%, and Northwest at 43%, and Western Cape at 33%. So if you look at the program and if we zoom into the key performance indicators and you look at the actual performance, I'm going to focus on the area where we have not achieved such a percent. 1.2 with regards to the 55% of the total Department of Labor MPET standards, the key performance indicators at level 3 and 4 by March 2016, we've not achieved that. We're sitting at 37%. The number of monitoring reports on service delivery improvements, plan produced within the days of the quarter ends or year ends, we have not achieved that because some of the functionaries supported submitted their reports late. Percentage of fraud cases received, this is one area that we also have not achieved. Out of 30 cases, 5 cases were finalized, and 25 cases are still in progress, and 20 cases are from health office, and 2 cases from Gauteng provincial office, and 2 cases from KZN provincial office, and 1 case from Mpumalanga provincial office. With regards to head office investigation, still in progress, as there is reliance based on our strategic partners, like other state organs. So due to the complex nature of some of these cases, we have to use external state organs to assist us with the finalization of the investigations. Okay. When it comes to the percentage of the women, youth, and people with disability, this has not been achieved, and it is mostly due to the delays in terms of the thing of vacancies. This is one area that we are also working very hard to address. The percentage of vacancy rate reduced by 31st March. Our target was 9.5%. We're sitting at 11.5%. Percentage of disciplinary cases resolved in 90 working days. We have not achieved that. The number of cases during the supporting period was sitting at 44. The number of cases resolved in 90 days at 24, and percentage resolved in 90 days was 55. So we know we're near the 100% that we wanted to be at by the end of the last quarter. Implement effective ICT governance framework. We have not achieved that. And the reason for that is that we've appointed this chief information officer late in the financial year, and it is only recently that we're working hard to make sure that we have ICT governance framework and also ICT governance structure implemented. The annual review and implementing the ICT studies of the department, I think we've been consistent this year in reporting that we have not achieved that, but it's something that we'll definitely implement in the new financial year because of the work that the Chief Information Officer has been doing recently. When it comes to inspection and enforcement services, this is a reflection in terms of how the provinces have performed in quarter four. And I think this is one area that I've indicated earlier that we have achieved. partially actually reflects to the serving of the recommendations to employers. And again, there are two provinces that are lagging behind, it's the First Rate and the Northern Cape. With regards to number of evaluated employers respected per year to determine compliance with employment equity, there's only one province that is, only two provinces that are lagging behind, is Limpopo and the Western Cape. The rest of the provinces have done pretty well. When it comes to inspection enforcement services, I think I've indicated one area, non-achievement. The percentage of inspection on request for work permits, one area that we have not been able to achieve consistently, I think, throughout the financial year. On public employment services, it's an issue relating to the regulations, which has to do with the fact that we have to make sure that the Employment Services Board is in place. It is the board that can come up with the regulations. We're doing our best to make sure that this board is established. The minister is in the process of looking at that.
Thank you so much for this to the point of report to TG. Members, questions for the chief? Honorable Lolly.
Thanks, Chair. Let's welcome the report. Chair, what is the bottleneck? I can see that the department can only perform up to 44% in employment creation. The country currently is having labor unrest here and there, and the performance of the department can't be said to be satisfactory because currently it's sitting at 50%. Is my interpretation correct when I look at slide 14, where the strength of your institutional capacity is 55%, whereas your overall performance is at 64? So you are unable to strengthen your capacity to an extent that it is even below generally overall performance. I see in slide 18 that inspection in Mpumalanga is standing at 100%. But these days, every time you open, you look at the newspapers, if Mpumalanga cases, is there value for the money there? Because why is it that the cases there are left unattended? Even yesterday, there was a case of somebody who was injured and left to die and all that. So why is it that there are such cases when they are spending 100% with inspection? You have dropped your performance in this resolution. What has happened? Thank you.
There is no other hand.
Yes.
Honorable Olive. Thank you, Honorable Olive.
Sorry, Chair. Sounds like the bell ringer doesn't like me. If I just look at these percentages, there's a lot of them which are below 50%, and that's quite worrying. Inspection enforcement services and public employment services are two that worry me the most. And when you look at let me refer to a specific page. Sorry. Your page 17 of the printed presentation, what slide number it is, your public employment services only at 44%. That's a serious problem. And the previous page, I'm worried about the occupational safety protection. And as my colleague said, the sound labor relations only at 50%, the occupational safety at 67%. Now, you know, we as political parties differ on policy, but what we don't differ on is safety. Safety is something that every political party is very worried about. And I'm worried that we're not achieving enough in terms of safety. And if you go to both of those issues, public employment services and safety, and as the DG pointed out so strongly, quarter four, Gauteng, on page 19, in public employment services, is only at 17% of the target for the whole year. You know, 17%, 14%, 14%, 17% of the whole year. And if Gauteng does, according to the DG's comment earlier, make 50% of the national figure, that's a severe problem. I mean, it's not often that a DG will admit that the problem up front and almost highlight it, but we need a solution, DG. What is the solution there? That's, I mean, I'm glad that you're not hiding the fact from us. That's very admirable, but we do need a solution to that problem. And then in terms of public, let me just turn over the page for a second, the inspection and enforcement services. On page 31 following, there are a number of noughts, zeros, and perhaps Mr. Seville can give us some more information. Zero in the Northwest were reviewed.
None.
Zero in the fourth quarter. I don't know whether that's the title for a year. I assume that's just the title for the fourth quarter. And then in Gauteng, Chairperson, I think you will probably agree with me when you say, when you see that in Gauteng, number of employers not complying is zero. Do you believe that? Now perhaps the ones that they visited complied completely, but perhaps the group that they are visiting is maybe badly selected. And maybe they should look to other companies that known transgressions have occurred in the past and go back there. Because, you know, whenever I see zero in a quarterly report, I get nervous. Either the sample selected is too narrow, or the inspectors, when they went out, didn't look carefully enough. Or something is wrong. I mean, is this committee really going to say we believe that in Gauteng it's unusual that anybody doesn't comply? Talk based on health and safety. And then there are mines in Gauteng. And that's, I know that there's a difference in terms of mines and inspections. I get that. But the whole of the East Rand it's becoming the last bucket, the Detroit of South Africa, where the companies close and companies function at half strength. Do those companies all comply? Every single one of them is helping. I don't believe that zero. If the zero is absolutely correct, it means that the sample of factories that are being visited is the raw sample. We need to change the sample. We need to don't investigate others. I personally reported the case to Mr. Seafield, and perhaps he can give me some firm feedback, of a company in the DA building in Newtown, in Johannesburg. We occupy one floor, and I'm not highlighting the DA, I'm just using Jefferson example. And there are, I don't know, 10 companies in that building in Newtown. And I contacted Mr. Seafield because we found some of the staff from other companies in the building crying on the steps because they're being mistreated and because there's no UIF and they didn't get their pay. The pay was never given to them for a period. I can't remember the details, but I did report it to Mr. Seafield. There's a particular company. It's past the financial year, so it doesn't fall into this fourth quarter. There's a company where they are abusing the staff. And inspection and enforcement services must go there and check on those examples. And if there's one in our building in Johannesburg, I promise you there's more in Gauteng. So I just want DG, please, if we can unpack that zero and get some sort of information on that zero, and perhaps Mr. Seafield can give me feedback, excuse me, I have a cold, on that one example, which I referred to him, excuse me, the next morning after I called him, inspectors did push up at that building. The next morning. So I don't know if that was, I don't know if that was coincidence or if the Labor Department takes our complaints very seriously. And the next morning the inspector was there. Unfortunately, on the list of companies that they were inspecting, the company that didn't comply was not on that list. So now I'm even more worried because do they do that company separately? Or was that just a random inspection by the inspectors? And if it was random, why did they exclude that one security company where I know there's abuse of staff? Excuse my voice, I'll stop to a person because I've got something and I'm afraid I can't speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further questions? Honorable America, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to echo the sentiments expressed by my colleague. It's worrying when I look at the overall performance on an annual basis, then the statistics doesn't look good at all. You know, on an annualized basis, the department only achieved 55%, 45.7% of its targets, which is not very good. One could understand that there may be entities within the portfolio that lower the overall performance, but it's worrying that for the past financial year, the department only achieved 55% of its identified targets, and then serious introspection and action needs to be taken against those departments within the portfolio that is underperforming. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. No questions for now, Kishi? So, talk.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask the respective DDCs to respond on the questions relating to their portfolios. Mr. Rato.
First performed at 40% and it has been consistent throughout. There were a number of things that we did. Firstly, we introduced very strict performance monitoring processes to make sure that the information that comes from provinces are supported with evidence that when the AG and internal audit goes there can verify and can attest to the fact that if they said somebody's place, there is evidence and that evidence can be verified. And I think, Honorable Chairperson, whilst that process may seem to have been harsh, but Honorable Members will recall that we moved from a situation where our performance was, even though reported, the AG put a display, and now the AG is satisfied with all the measures that were put in place. It may have seemed to have been harsh, but I think it has actually borne results. Secondly, the DG, in terms of all the provinces that we work with, because the support given to them is the same, the budget allocated differs in terms of the population, etc. But we expect the performance to be in line with the targets and the budget that has been allocated. Now, to correct the problem of underperformance, we are now in the process of signing performance agreements with the various chief directors at provincial level, because we now realize that in some areas, you can have one province performing well and the other one not performing well, so that there's consequence management. I think the way issue that we have to deal with in terms of IT systems that have not been effective, the question of staff. But you may have seen in the last month in that Treasury, even though they did cut the budget, they were very sympathetic in terms of the areas that we are responsible for. And we have advertised in a number of provinces employment practitioner posts and career counselors posts that are becoming vacant and fast-tracking the positions, because one of the problems that we're sitting with was the capacity issue, and we are on the case of provinces to fill those positions, because we cannot accept excuses that we have capacity constraints when we have vacancies at provincial level and they've got the budget. And I think on the other hand, we also had problems in terms of the front line. If you look at indicators that really impacted on us, the one on matching processing of work permits and PA, we are addressing it in two folds. One was to move away from manual systems, because there have been related problems both with the AG and in terms of monitoring. In a number of labor centers, targeting 28, we're piloting a process of self-service stations that will allow people to capture and match themselves on the systems. And within a month or 2 months' time, would invite the portfolio committee to go to the labor center just next to Cape Town, to go and see the kind of system that was introduced to assist our CSOs that are over budget. I'm sure it's an open secret that our offices are very busy, there are long queues and so on, and our staff at local level are unable to process manually work for PERS, for IES, and so on. And I think one of the things we have done to improve the situation was to make sure that we have dedicated CSOs and to supplement their work with self-service stations, so that we can improve our performance in the coming financial year. The economic situation and the budget cut was something that we took up with Treasury. If honorable members look at our annual performance plan for 2016 and 2017, there was a drastic reduction of targets in line with the capacity that we have and the resources that we have, so that we are able to look and meet the concerns that provinces have had, and Treasury has accepted the review of those targets, and we have done it in our annual performance plan for 2016-17. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'll start with the issue that was raised by Honourable Lodi in terms of Mpumela, the place of the rising sun. Just in terms of the calendar set in the APP, they have achieved 100%. But it doesn't mean that there are no incidents that are worrisome in nature, particularly in the food industry. And that were in the recent past, and even I think in the future going ahead, the intervention of the Director General and the Deputy Minister was also forced to address some of the issues where they were really very salient problems with regard to compliance issues in particular areas in the animal industry. But in terms of the target access in the APP, that is a true state of affairs. We have verified the information and it is a badge. And then in terms of issues raised by Honourable Olive, first of all, the issues around the performance of the department on occupational health and safety issues. I think we share the sentiments in terms of the importance and recognition should be given that we're moving from a basis of the performance of 60% in the aforementioned quarters, and the fourth quarter we aim to improve our performance to 67%, albeit against the background of very meager resources, because we're sitting with around 120 OHS inspectors countrywide, and the need can really not be overemphasized in terms of our presence and dealing with issues of OHS. I think the issue of dwindling financial resources is common knowledge, and in our quest to address some of these things, we have as a department come up with innovative ways of addressing our financial needs. And one of those is to come up with an alternative business model within the department where if you look at the Coil Act, for instance, OHS inspectors play a preventative role in terms of injuries in the workplace. And therefore, what is agreed is that the compensation fund is going to assist in terms of financing OHS posts so that we are able to broaden the band of OHS inspectors going forward, and we are hopeful that it will go a long way in terms of addressing some of the problems that you are coming up with, that we are experiencing. But the bottom line is that we do not have enough resources to cover the spectrum, and I think what hit us hard the most is the fact that we had vacancies and some of which couldn't fund. In terms of slide 31, where there are those in Northwest and Southern, these are employment equity targets. In Northwest, the annual target was 9. The province had already achieved, and therefore that is what we see in the first quarter. There was nothing, and they redirected resources elsewhere because the target for the entire year had already been achieved. And then on Housing, we're also very high because the way you feel, Honourable colleagues, about zeros is exactly how we feel. The zeros make us very nervous because they just stand out. And so we verify the information is as such. And I just need to emphasize that this way, employment equity sessions, not only just for BCA for that matter. And one, obviously, take your point in terms of looking at the sample and see if that's going forward. If there's need to come up with a sample that is representative and the information as provided is correct.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, DG, Honourable Members. I will speak to the issues relating to the strengthening of institutional capacity. The indicators that we use to measure that strategic objective are, for instance, the issue of the capacitation in terms of staff. So we have the vacancy rate there. A week ago, we reported that the vacancy rate was standing at 11.0%. We can reliably report that as of yesterday, the vacancy rate was standing at 10.54%. So it's something that we are rigorously addressing as a department. The context, again, in the area of filling of vacancies, is that we are working towards complying with the requirements by CEDAR of reducing the allocation on compensation of employees by 64 million in the financial year 16-17. So the slowness is associated with the fact that when a vacancy occurs, we don't just move to fill it. We conduct an investigation in relation to whether or not we still need that vacancy, whether or not our business model still requires us to fill that vacancy. So the delays are coming from processes that have now kicked in, whereas in the past we used to just say, when a vacancy occurs, go ahead and advertise. We don't automatically advertise. We do an investigation to check whether indeed we still need to fill that vacancy, and that is designed to enable us as a department to comply really with the directive that we must cut compensation of employees by 64 million in the year 16-17. The other indicators are obviously associated with that one. They are in the indicators of the employment of women at SMS level, the disability target, as well as the youth target. Even with the employment of SMS members, women at SMS, we have moved as of yesterday. We were standing at 40% representation of women. We acknowledge that there is still a lot that we need to do, and we are again vigorously pursuing the target. In terms of the disability target, the national target is 2%. As a department, we did set an ambitious target because we set the disability target at 3%. We are currently standing at 2.9. We are still above the national target, but we are below the ambitious target that we are trying to pursue as a department, as we stand at 2.9%. The other challenges are in the area of investigation, as it has been correctly observed by Honourable Member Loliwe. What's the biggest challenge here is that we are having an increase in the detection of fraud cases. We are investigating the cases, but we have severe capacity constraints. We lost through resignation a seasoned investigator, and we lost him to the private sector. So the point of counter offering and trying to retain the process, that person, was really out of question. So we are competing with the private sector for resources. And we have also identified that where we are losing staff primarily in the areas of level 7, 8, 9. While we would like to implement our retention strategy, when you push for retention at those levels, you retain a person today, 3 months down the line, they've found another offer they want to go. It's difficult to retain them when they are still at those levels and when they are still young. It's easy to negotiate for retention at more senior levels. So those are the kinds of challenges that we're grappling with. With fraud investigations, with misconduct cases, it's the investigations are being hampered by our capacity issues as well as external dependencies, because some of the cases have to be referred, for example, to SAPS, so it becomes difficult for us to get a finalization at the rate at which we would like. The DG has already indicated that in the area of ICT, we were struggling with leadership in that space, but we have a chief information officer on board now. And the other thing that delayed us was the finalization of consolidating the ICT strategy, because we embarked on a process of consolidating the ICT strategy for the Department for Compensation Fund for the UIF. The strategy is now in place, and there is nothing standing in the way of implementing the strategy in the current financial year. With your permission, DG, there are two indicators that fall under the COO, and may I humbly request that they address those two indicators, which fall under the ECOO, but are still within Program 1 administration. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. The indicators that we have not achieved relate to the MPES standards that we had indicated that we wanted to achieve 5%, but we only were able to get to 37%. And a number of reasons is that the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, when they look at what we have done, they actually check as to whether, when you say a policy in place, was in place at the time that it was supposed to be in place, or whether it's in the process. And I think those are some of the things that we are fixing. Because you've seen slides, we say that some of the reports were received late. It's because they're in the process of being finalized. And we had reported that the strategy is there, but it was not signed. So those are some of the things that they've indicated, that for us to be able to be absolved of that, we need to provide you the evidence. In the other areas, in the area of the SDIP, the Service Delivery Improvement Standards, which we are working hard on, we're at a stage whereby at this present time and moment we have an emerging model, and that was the consulting with, and as soon as we have finalized that, we will submit, and then I think we'll be able to address those two areas of concern.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues, honourable members. I just want to respond to the request for information around a particular investigation or request for an inspection that was forwarded to me. This request was forwarded to me on the 5th of May, 2016. And since it does not fall within a general purview of the work that I do, I forward it to the provincial office and the provincial chief inspector in which that is. I requested a report. I have not received that report as yet, but as soon as we do, we will forward the message to our parliamentary office. Thank you.
In conclusion, Chair, concluding on the questions that were asked, Honorable America raised a point with regards to the fact that if you look at the annualized performance of the department, we're sitting at 55%, and this is worrisome, and it's not acceptable. We agree with him entirely. In fact, if you look at where we started at the beginning of the financial year, we started at 47%, and we 55% reflects a marginal improvement, and we actually should be sitting at above 89%. So we take that point, and we're doing whatever best to make sure that those who are contributing to poor performance of the department, they are made to feel
there are consequence management, and we're implementing them. And even with this kind of performance, we will take those who have not performed well, we'll take them to task, so that we improve our performance. And I'm pretty sure, Sir President and the Honourable Members, that in this financial year, we'll take the 55% or we'll perform above the 55%. Thank you.
I know what I'm doing now is a little bit irregular, I'm sorry. But I heard what an official said in terms of the zeros on page 31. But I'm sorry, I cannot believe this graph. It is impossible that 43 out of 43 companies in the Eastern Cape are not compliant in terms of these inspections. 60 out of 60 in the Western Cape are non-compliant. And not on non-compliant in housing. It is impossible. I absolutely cannot accept this problem. It's page 31. 1.2 percentage of non-compliant employers of those reviewed in reference to 1.1 issued with a recommendation within 90 days of the review. These figures are impossible. It's absolutely impossible. So there's something wrong with your record keeping, or there's something wrong with the group of companies you're inspecting, or something. It is functionally impossible. I please ask you to go and review this table and go and call all of these reports up. It's 50 in the Western Cape, 43 in the Eastern Cape, and in Gauteng, out of 48, I don't know, the two tables don't add up, but anyway, it's a large number. And it is impossible that 60 out of 60 in the Western Cape, 43 out of 43 in the Eastern Cape are not compliant, and zero in Gauteng are compliant, are non-compliant. It is impossible. It is completely impossible.
Thank you, Sir President. If you read the indicator says percentage of non-compliant employers of those reviewed in reference to 0.1 to 1.1 issued with a recommendation within 90 days of the review. So if you go to 1.1, 1.1 says the number of designated employers reviewed per year to determine compliance with employment equity legislation. So it then says, in the Western Cape is 60. Then it says, those who have been issued, because they did not comply, they were then issued with recommendation. So 60 out of 60 were issued with a recommendation that says, you do not comply. Okay. And that's correct. So I want to start in Cape Town. That's correct. So 50 companies that we reviewed did not comply with employment equity, and they were issued with the recommendations in line with the legislation. So you then go to Gauteng. Now the zero that you see in Gauteng says, out of the 8 that were reviewed, Gauteng has not issued any recommendations. That's what it says.
And they all comply?
No. No. It says they do not issue the notices. Sorry,
sir. Don't respond to Honorable Bruce will make a follow up from what you're saying. If you're speaking in that manner, do continue. But when you have something to say on this thing, I think it must be the Honorable thing.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm sorry for that. So what it says with regards to Gauteng is that they reviewed 80 companies. And out of 80, they did not issue a recommendation. It doesn't say that the 80 complied. Now, is the failure on the part of the province to issue the 80 recommendation? They should have issued the recommendation as
as prescribed by the legislation. So that's the instrument that we use to make sure that companies comply with their own employment equity plans once they are reviewed. So that's the reason why you would have a zero there, and that's the reason why you have a 60 in the Western Cape.
Is it understandable,
Honourable Colleagues? Yeah, okay, I accept what the DG is saying. That poses the question. Why do you say in your box number of employers not complying? That's not notice issue. That says number of employers not complying. So that box is misleading for a start. Secondly, does he have an explanation as to why zero notices were issued? If 43 out of 44 companies in the Eastern Cape are listed here as not complying, and 43 notices were issued, why is it just magic in Gauteng? Why are they not issuing notices? Is there a problem with notice issuing in Gauteng? Or, I mean, how does it explain 0 out of 80 and 43 out of 44 in the Eastern Cape? What? I'm not trying to be difficult. I want to understand what's broken. If you can tell me what the problem is. Is Gauteng refusing to issue notices? Or is it just miraculous in Gauteng that they all comply? Or, I heard what he said, but it just still doesn't explain why there's a zero, because in the real world, there could never be a zero. There might be even 5, or it might be 9 or something, but do you have 43 out of 44 in the Eastern Cape, 60 out of 60 in the Western Cape, listed as employers not complying? You cannot have 0 out of 80 in counting employers not complying. It is functionally impossible. So I hear that he's saying that's about notices issued. Fine. Why aren't we issuing notices in Gauteng then? There's something wrong, DG.
I think let's respond. I have the DG. I think I will give an opportunity to explain further. Because Honorable Olive is, I think the issue in the Western Cape, from what it is saying, the issue of the Western Cape is clear, because they are very clear, Western Cape, because the notices are issued, so it's that one is clear. And then I think the question that must be responded to is whether the whether what is written in that box is to say it's zero or to say notices were issued. I think that is the question that is outstanding. Nothing else. DJ.
Thank you very much. I let me admit that I made a mistake with the Gauteng. Let me explain the Gauteng again and the Eastern Cape. The Gauteng, the Apollo reviewed 80, and the number of employers not complying in Gauteng is 0. Now, ordinarily, if you have number of employers that are not complying, you should not be issuing notices, because you say they are complying, these employers are complying. So 80 out of 8 in Gauteng, they complied. Once the review was done, the inspectors realized that they are complying. So there was no need for them to issue any notice. In fact, the honourable members can have access to these documents, because when you write a recommendation, when you do a review, there are documents that we are using to in going through the process. So if you need the information, it is readily available. For Eastern Cape, what it means
is so that we don't go back to this question again. From the honourable member, I hear that the ones that you identified or you went to or you visited, the 80 ones that you visited complied. Now the issue, I know, because he has raised the question with you, how do you do this selection?
Okay.
Because it can't be that all companies there, he went to an extent of mentioning mines that you say they are compliant. Maybe to avoid further questioning, let's talk about the issue of identification of companies that you go to. I'm clear, because hey, I'm clear, I think we're clear on that. So we don't want a question to, we don't want another question that is going to say it's not 100%, but you must just tell us, take us through your selection processes. How does it work? Am I right on the college?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Somehow we will explain this here.
Okay.
It's not logical.
Because that person is saying, would you, I think it's clear that if you had others, that one or two, or how is it possible that you only identify those, everything has been is done. But in this question, I don't think that this answer, taking into account what is being said by Western Cape and by Mpumalanga, the selection process, from what I'm hearing, is not that they go straight to companies, and when they get there, those companies, they find 100% compliance. But what I'm hearing is that once they go to those companies and then notices issued, then companies comply. No, those are two issues, I understand. But I'm talking now about the ones that are complying. Or are you saying this is the ones that are complying or that have complied? You issued notices on issues that you have identified as not right, and then later they met the deadline. And after meeting deadline, then they qualified to the ones that comply. Is that what you're saying?
Chairperson, this is a quota for tires. Now, if you look at the annual tires, you're not going to see this picture. Because throughout the, from quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, there were companies that were viewed in Gauteng. And so, you would find that there would be fluctuations. Now what we do, we take the reports that the employment equity plans and the employment equity reports that companies have submitted to the department. We then disaggregate them. If from Gauteng, we then say Gauteng will do X number of will review X number of companies, and on the basis of that review, we then, if you are compliant, there is no need for us to issue with the recommendation, and that is exactly what happened here. So of the designated employers in terms of the employment equity that Gauteng has reviewed, they found that there is no need for Gauteng to issue them with recommendations, because what they reflected in the employment equity plans in terms of the objectives that they themselves as companies have set, and the report that they submitted to the department, there is proof that they have done that, and there is therefore no need for the Department of Labor to issue them with a recommendation. So if there is no need for a recommendation, we don't issue it. So this is what happened. It may be difficult, to comprehend, but that's the true state of affairs, and we have reports to this effect. When it comes to the Eastern Cape, for instance, what this report says is that of the 44 that they reviewed, only one was compliant, and that is why you have 43 number of employers not complying, and they were issued with recommendations.
So that's how it works.
Honorable Olive, I think we should be understanding. I don't know if you don't understand now, because if the DG refer back to, you're saying this is a third quarter. I mean, sorry, it's a fourth quarter. And if we go back to first quarter, second quarter, today, you might not find what you see now. And I think that we should accept, because if we had those, if you had those statistics in your fingerprints from quarter one to quarter four, that are saying this report has been constant. There has never been the question of non-compliance in Gauteng. Then it's something that you would then ask the question that we're asking, seeing that we did not do that, and the report is not talking to that, because they expect that as members of parliament we would have followed that history. I think we should not shoot them down for that. I think we should pass. And then if you discover, after looking through the that in Gauteng, it has never been a problem, or there were no notices issued, everything, then I think your question of the selection process will arise. But at this stage, let's suggest that you must pass.
Okay. And Chair, I accept that, and I think that we look forward to the annual report, because the annual report I have will give us the full picture, and I agree with you, we must look at the annual report. But my last comment is, DG, what this quarterly report shows is that it seems that in Gauteng, the inspectors are choosing the easy targets in the last quarter. It does appear that. The whole year picture, I'll wait. I won't say anything more, because you will give us the annual report and then we'll have the full year to look at. But it looks like towards the end of the financial year, they got a bit lazy and they picked the easy targets, so there wouldn't be such hard work to do in terms of issuing notices and all that sort of jazz. I mean, it's not 1 month, it's 3 months in a row. They only found companies that complied. That's unusual. So, I mean, I will pass now. Leave it. When we get an annual report, we can ask the question.
I don't think, I think you've made a number of explanations. And I think that comment is not correct. Because that comment insinuates that the companies that qualify now in this month are companies that were all identified in this 2 months and all were found complying. It neglects the fact that you have said, or it does not look at the fact that you have raised, that we must look at the history of this employment equity from quarter one. It might be that in these 3 months that you have all of them complying, it might be that in the past quarters they did not comply 100%. They might have issues that you have asked them to look at them. But when you come at the last, by the time you come here and compile your report, some of them might have complied and therefore qualify to be companies that are complying. At this stage, we don't have that information because we have not looked at the history. So that comment, I reject it. So I think if there are any other questions, let's ask them. It means that we have concluded our session with the department, and we thank you very much, Gigi. We have noted the the improvement from 44 to 64. We are looking forward to get to the target that you have of 80%. And if you are moving at the rate that you are moving with from last year to this financial year 16-17, you will get there sooner than you expected. And for issues that need to be followed, please pay special attention so that we can move forward with speed in all these entities. But I think we must applaud you for the improvement from that 44 to 64. It's a big stride. We've been in this committee since our term. We know what problems are there that come from previous years, and we appreciate so far. So, thank you. And for you, we give you 15 minutes to pack your bags, and then the committee, we have committee members who have the issue of the private member bill that we are going to go to. And I think that main issue with committee. Sorry. Department, if you are interested to listen to this committee's deliberation, you are free to do that. Yes, those who are interested, you are free to do that, but it's us today. And then you are right, there might be questions that are arising. In fact, there are questions that are arising. My apologies. I think you, someone with information in his or her finger on the private amendment bill must stay behind, because if we decide as committee to say we go ahead, we want, we desire, it's desirable, then we will need the department to tell us about the financial implications. If we don't, something else. So thank you, DJ. You are left for 2 minutes now. Our meeting, the issue in front of us is that issue of private members' bills. And the committee has followed all the steps so far. The first step was the briefing by the private member, Honorable Dudley. It was done that in the committee. Also, we have allowed to give the opportunity, because our second step, to the department to come and comment on what was proposed. And the third step that we went to is to call a legal advisor to brief the committee on the processes to be followed. And today, it is the committee itself that should look on the issues or have raised comment on the issues that have been raised. And the issues will be whether members of the committee feel that it is desirable to have this bill after having listened to all, to the member, private member, processes that we have taken and what the department has said, and us as the committee today, all we have to do is to reflect on the issues that have been raised to us and say whether we want and or not, which is the right terminology is desire or desirable. Is it desirable or not? So I will give then to the members to say something on that. Honorable Mandlatshe.
Chairperson, we have looked into the proposed bill and we've had the advice from the legal advisor, but it is desirable that we look into it as a comment. But my proposal would be, I think we need to make a lot of consultations to our stakeholders, unions, the public, etc. But we start the department would at least give us an idea of what would be the impact of the bill, how would it affect the budget of the department. That was the question that was in our minds.
Honorable Mandlatshe, you raised a number, I think about three issues. The first issue you are saying is desirable. I think let's give an opportunity to members to agree and disagree, and then we go to the second step of if we agree, then we will come back to the proposal that you have made if we agree. And then the department will be the last one. So you raise the issue. So members, let's talk on that issue. I can see your hand, Honorable Colleague. Honorable Mandlatshe has spoken on the desirability. So can we hear the other view, if there is any?
Thank you. In terms of our party, I mean, we support the principle of paternity leave. It's a principle. The details is another story. We need to discuss that. But Chairperson, I raised in a previous meeting, I'm sorry I didn't attend the final briefing on this issue by the department and the lawyers. So I missed that briefing. My colleagues were here, but I was not. My question, though, I raised before, and I was told to park it and wait. And that question was whether we've given an opportunity to Mr. Henry, I think his name is Tip Blanche, or something like that, who wrote to us as a committee before we heard the Proud Members Bill from the Honourable Member. He got a letter from Mr. Tip Blanche with his request that we consider this issue. And, you know, as a committee, I mean, we don't have multiple bills dealing with the same issue. We try to do it together so that we don't come back. I really think that before any final decision is made, that we do give Mr. Tip Blanche an opportunity to present his case. I don't know him. I've never met him. He wrote to all political parties in Parliament, then he wrote to this committee, then he sent us a proposal from his side. And, you know, while we agree with the principle, some of his proposals we don't like, you know, some details, but that's just my private view. We really should not ignore him, because we're into a lot of trouble, and this committee usually receives inputs from people when they go to a lot of trouble. And he's the person, I think, in South Africa who's gone the most trouble to raise this issue. So I don't want us to just make final decisions without ever having heard him. We serve the public, and he's one of the public. I may not agree with his conclusions, but at least I think he should be given the opportunity to say something. I mean, it's his campaign almost. He's not a political party person. He's an individual, and he almost ran his own campaign. In fact, it was sometimes irritating the number of times he contacted us. But that, be that as it may, I think my proposal is at least we should hear him before the final decision is taken on whether or not the bill is desirable. But we as a party have no problem with paternity leave, and so we are quite happy with the concept of parental leave. But obviously there are financial implications, there are legal implications, there are implications for the various funds in the department as well, because it may result in drawing money from one or other of the funds, and I don't know what the financial implications of all of that are. It needs to be properly costed before we can, you know, consider what to do. Thank you very much.
Chair, we may understand this in different ways. Where I'm seated, I think when we agree whether the bill is desirable or not, we are trying to open doors so that whoever has something to say on the bill is given an opportunity to do so. What Mr. Charles Blanche has done is to write to all MPs, "I agree." Then, over and above that, Ms. Darkey then came to present to the committee. So I wanted to say to the members of the committee, why don't we then agree on desirability of the bill and then make sure that the first person that we are inviting, even before, if for instance we agree on public hearings as we did with UI amendments, then we call him and listen to what he's saying. Because what worries me is we are not sure whether we are saying is desirable or not, but already we are listening to two people. So can we create an opportunity for Mr. Blanche within the process instead of outside the process? Thanks, sir.
Honorable Loliwa, I think you're on point, because what we are discussing today or deliberating on the committee is a private member's bill that was referred to us by Parliament. And we have already travelled. And Honorable Loliwa is right, because what we should be discussing is what process do we want to follow if we agree. Because I think Honorable Mandashe has proposed, and listening to what Honorable Loliwe is saying, though we did not ask formally, because the second question that I've asked after Honorable Mandashe was yourself, and you said you spoke that English of principle, but I think let's agree, all of us, that the motion is desirable. And Mr. Terre Blanche must be the part of those who will come to present in Parliament. But let's agree now, let's go further. If we agree that, you know, it's desirable, then the processes that we must take in terms of public hearings, so that we ensure in that process that no one is left out, including Mr. Terre Blanche. Honorable Odisa, you agree? Okay. So then, are you seconding Honorable Mantashe for to say the motion is desirable? Because that was the first hand and your hand is the second one.
Yes, I would say the motion is desirable for further investigation. So yes.
So the motion is desirable. Now, when we get to that, if we are done with that stage, it means members are being desirable. The second step before we go to the further actions that the committee, or further processes that the committee must follow, the secretary of the committee must read that motion of desirability. I'm going to
I'm going to bite my tongue. Honorable Lolly, I'm going to say when I get the agenda, and then I'll point at you, and then you finish it for me. So let the committee, we are going to allow the committee to vote on this motion. So it's going to be read and vote for it, and then go further. Mr. Frass?
Thank you, Chairperson. The motion of desirability reads as follows, which will be voted for by the committee because it must be actually reported to the House that this is what the committee has desired about this bill. It reads as follows. Motion of desirability on the Labour Laws Amendment Bill, PMB 5 of 2015. That in the opinion of the Portfolio Committee on Labour, legislation is desirable to amend the Basic Conditions of Employment Act 1997 so as to correct an obsolete reference to an act to provide for parental adoption and commissioning parental leave to employees, to provide that a collective agreement may not reduce an employee's entitlement to parental adoption or commissioning parental leave, to amend the Unemployment Insurance Act 2001 so as to provide for the right to claim parental and commissioning parental benefits from the Unemployment Insurance Fund, to provide for the application for and the payment of parental and commissioning parental benefits from the Unemployment Insurance Fund, to correct an obsolete reference to an act, to provide that the number of contributors to whom parental and commissioning parental benefits were paid and the amount of such payments be included in the written report from the Director General to the Minister, and to provide for matters connected therewith, and that this deal before the committee be taken as a basis. Thank you, Chair.
Bahraina, yes, can you say it formally? Should we, can we vote now for the bill, for the motion?
Yeah, I'm in favor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Members, all those who are in favor?
Yes.
Unanimously, this says the motion has been voted for by all the members of the committee. Now, then the step to follow is public hearings that you have already alluded to. What form should we take? Remember that public hearings, you may go, we may apply to the House Chair to go from province to province or select certain provinces or with Honorable Mandashe, in fact, as the proposal of Honorable Mandashe was that we call the stakeholders and all that we can be able to get Parliament as we did with the UIF. So I think instead of us going all over, let's talk to that proposal. Honorable Ollis.
Thanks, Jay. I think we are not going to be able to do public hearings in the next 3 months all over the country. So it doesn't make sense to agree to a process which we then can't implement. But I do think that I like the idea of inviting anyone in the country to make proposals, and then we have a hearing here where those who wish to come and verbally present can make their presentations. But anybody in the country can write to us a proposal. I think we should invite that, invite written submissions from anywhere in the country, and then those who wish to make oral submissions, we can have a public hearing here as we did with the UIF and the very other polls. It's not contentious in the idea, you know, so it's not a big drama. The contentiousness is with the money and how we calculate all of those things. So it's contentious from the point of view of funding it, not from the ideas of principles. So I think our submissions are likely to be around cost effectiveness and affordability and all that. Thank you.
The proposal to have public hearings in Parliament
and for all the stakeholders around the country. I definitely will go through the process of having them inside, but in actually, the proposal of Honorable Mandash has been seconded or supported by Honorable Olish from DA. From the members who have not spoken who are coming something different from what has been proposed. Honorable Buckley?
Thank you. Yes, I'm not sure if we've had an in-depth study from the Department of Labor as to how much it would cost and what the permutations. We need the permutations done so that we know how much it would cost and whether the department has the funding to actually pay it. I'm not sure when that comes in. Would that come in as part of the hearings and part of the inputs? Forgive me, I'm novice at this.
Thanks, Chair. I think that concern was also raised by Honorable Mandash. So maybe what we need to do is, whilst we are unfolding, the process unfolding, let's also embark on the cost implications so that we don't just make decision based on wrong assumptions without having had a glimpse of what the financial implications are. So if law allows it, let's run into the processes concurrently, so that we don't delay the process.
Thank you, Honorable Mantashe. Seeing that the department is here, maybe they can give guidance if they are going to embark on the process that the members are raising. They can say so that when we come back, they can be the first ones before we even call the public hearing. But if they are saying they have done their study on the issue, they can also tell us what is the department.
Thank you, Chair and members. As reported in the last meeting when we were doing a presentation on this issue, the department is busy with the actual report on this issue, and that report is not yet ready. As soon as it's ready and available, I'm sure the department will be able to come and brief the committee what the short report indicates in terms of the cost.
Okay. So we are all agreeing, seeing that we will be away for 3 months, it means therefore that when we come back, we as the Honourable Colleagues will rearrange the program that we have, so that they are the priority. Because if we have to move with it or not to move with it now, it will depend on what they would say. So we are all agreeing that until such time you come back to us, then we can move forward with public hearings. Honourable Ollis.
I agree with you. If I can just add, could we advertise for submissions during these 3 months so that when we come back, we've got submissions. It means we set time over the 3 months. We can't do anything with the submissions, but at least if the secretary's got a pile of submissions from the public, then we've closed the period for written submissions. My suggestion is that we call for submissions now when we go into recess, because it's 3 whole months, and by then if somebody hasn't given a submission, it's too late to have their chance.
Let me get something clear. I hear what you are saying. My worry for us to say, let's go forward and publicize that marketing or that publication is going to cost us a lot of money. For adverts, you pay a lot. I think I would want to hear from the department, because if we then invite the public for submissions and then come back tomorrow and say we can't do it in the financial question, what then? What is? Do you want to say something? Do you want to tell us something? What is the on our members from the department? I think you should give us a clue. You must also talk on this
Because remember that for us to go forward or not go, it depends on you. Now we have taken a decision that the motion is we desire it has to be there. But now we have a problem of financial implications. I think I'm scared of us going concurrently or simultaneously with this process of you checking whether there is money or there's no money, and then you come back tomorrow after we've made submissions, after people have submitted, after we've spent parliamentary money, and then the department comes back and say, no man, not now. Maybe it will be 2019 or 2020. So can you just assist us? Which process do you suggest, or do you think it's fine? We do worry is money. We spend money more than 100,000 for adverts. You come back and say, we're not ready.
Sure, I think the time that we're talking about in terms of the 2 months, remember we were here for a week, 2 weeks ago, when we reported that we're starting offshore report to look on this, not only on the issue of parental leave, we're looking also on the issue of resignation, all those issues that we left glossed over in the preparation and network. As part of that package, we want the authorities to look and correct all of that. And within the 3 months that the research is going to give enough time for that. And the suggestion that the committee should wait for that report, and then on the basis of that report, if the committee accepts that report, start then the process of calling. And I agree with the chairperson, if you call people and then correct them and say, no, you're not going to go through, increasing expectation and the cost involved when the report is given. We don't think that the report will do that, but we're going to show from what the auction authorities are saying, we think they will be able to carry it.
Can I then make another proposal that says, if you complete the process in a week's time, can then at least tell the chairperson, because once you indicate to the chairperson, then we will be free to put an advert, because we would have known, or will know, even if it has not come officially with the committee that you have money. We do know that you have money. You know that you all agree that the committee is in for the advert, but the only problem is this one. So that then, you should not members say, where was the decision taken? Where was this report given? Do we all agree that if within, before we come back, they say they have money, they indicate to the chairperson, I can send, that thing can be sent to you, all of you, but then we can continue with asking for submission without a formal report like this.
Chairperson, thank you. I think it's key for us all to get the report. If we all get the financial report and it's positive, then yes, go ahead and call for the adverts. Because, the adverts are not a decision. They're just asking for public comment.
Thank you. Any other member? I think we agree now. Whether if it comes, whether it's informal, then we'll go ahead and ask the adverts. We won't wait for an official report. Be that as it may, we still want that official reporting. Members, I think we have exhausted the issue, and I do know that the members, with the submissions that have come in from COSATU, Transnet, and Gender Equality, are with the members. So the members, at least they have something to look at and study and prepare themselves, so that by the time the other submissions are coming, we would have read from this one. Honorable America, your body language is saying you have not seen the submissions. Is it wrong? Am I reading your body language wrong?
That's good, Madam Chair. I am not easy in this one, this whole particular process. I can't think that at a previous discussion we had where the department was saying that there's a basket of legislation that is being reviewed in terms of that needs reform to unleash the potential for job creation. I think for me, although this is important, I mean, the focus should be on those pieces of legislation that needs sort of possible amending to create potential to create many more jobs for our people. And I think that perhaps explained my uneasiness in terms of, because if this is rapid desire to deal with this piece of legislation now, whereas there's other things that need to be at this stage priority in terms of creating jobs for our people. Okay.
I think he was just expressing himself. He is one member, and we have agreed the process that we have agreed upon as the majority of the members, that process that we have gone. So the sooner you get that information, the better for us. We are done on this issue. And at least we know Honorable Dudley is always here when we talk about this issue. You are welcome all the time. Yeah, we keep on informing you whenever we're dealing with the bill. Members, we have one set of minutes. That are you keeping that whole set? It's only now. Oh, members, at least you put it easy, the minute has been sent to you. So, can we let go? Remember, the first page. Second. Members, anyone who wants to, there's a third page. The last page. Who wants to move for adoption? Honorable Buffin? Yeah. What is your honorable complaint?
I move for adoption of these minutes.
Is voting for adoption. Honorable Lempo?
And second.
Honorable Mpotongwane is seconding it. I think there's only one announcement. Just the announcement is one. It's about the Geneva Conference. This year, the House Chair, the invitation came from the Minister for all members of the committee, and the response to that email was that only the chairperson who would be going. And the chairperson will be going alone, not even with a staff member. Remember that we have the government embarked and parliament on bell timing, and I think that is the reason. So we are announcing this so that you are not surprised to hear that one of you is abroad. That is the situation. And fortunately, the conference is taking place whilst we are still on recess. It's starting from the 30th, finishes on the 11th. So that is conspiracy period. That's the announcement.
Afternoon again, members. IT unit of Parliament has just asked to quickly for 10, 15 minutes to just take members through a new application called My Parliament on how they will access their documents. They are here just to give the members that. Sorry. They just asked.
It means that something that you want us to hear before recess. So we want those kind members. Let's hear what is that you have got for us. Do you need to correct anything? How long will it take you? That 10 to 15 minutes should not exist. Okay, it must be later.
Thanks for accommodating us in your schedule. We understand this is the last sitting. Okay, so I am going to make a quick presentation. It's just one slide. Okay, what we are doing is we are trying to make the work of members very easy. You know the problem with getting the problem with getting